You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, a federal judge upheld Wisconsin's right to work law yesterday. We'll talk to a labor expert about that news and how the law could affect Wisconsin workers.
First, a new investigative report has discovered that Wisconsin could face a debt of more than $6 billion in the coming years in unfunded retirement benefit liabilities.
Those liabilities come from agreements made by the state with employees promising generous retirement and health care benefits. But along the way, not enough money was set aside to meet all of those obligations.
Jason Stein is with us now. He's a Capitol reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's been covering the potential pension and health benefit shortfall. Jason, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, there's some good news and some bad news in reading your reporting on this on Wisconsin's public employee retirement funding. On the bad side, you found a lot of, and this is especially with local governments, haven't funded their obligations well enough. Can you lay out what's happening for us?
Right. So the first thing to point out is that these are the more than $6 billion that we found is at the local government level. We're very fortunate in the state of Wisconsin that we do have a fully funded pension system and a relatively modest amount of retiree health benefit liabilities. It's at the local level where in some cases you will see schools and counties and cities that are carrying some pretty substantial obligations on their books.
So what are some of the cities that cities and local governments and school systems that are most affected by this?
Right. More than $4 billion is in Milwaukee County. There's more than $1 billion in retiree pension and health liabilities for the city, county, and schools of Milwaukee, each of those entities. Racine is another place where there are really substantial challenges. If you add up the city, county, and Racine Unified School District, you get $686 million. Almost all of that liability is in for retiree health benefits.
How did those communities get there?
You know, one example that I give is the city of Beloit owes more than $100 million in retiree health liability projected. And in that case, police officers can retire in Beloit. They may be retiring in their early 50s, and they're eligible for the city to pick up the majority of their health insurance. Now, when you look at what that cost, the city health insurance for family coverage an individual is more than $22,000 a year. So when you're talking about someone that is not eligible for Medicare for more than a decade, you can easily get to a $200,000 or even $250,000 potential liability there.
What was the thinking up front? Is it something along the lines of, okay, maybe the pay isn't great, but the job's worthwhile because you're going to have these guaranteed benefits down the road?
Right. So, you know, in many cases, this was something that looked attractive to elected officials, and this can be as much as 40 years ago. I mean, in some cases, this is even happening in the early 1970s that local governments are choosing to offer this benefit to their employees. They may do it as a way to avoid having to give salary increases or as large of salary increases. And, you know, at one time, health insurance simply did not cost what it costs today. And so what you're finding is that in the communities where they haven't adjusted these benefits over the years, they can really add up to pretty massive obligations.
So they weren't expecting the health costs to be as high, maybe not expecting, lifespans have changed a little bit, maybe not expecting people to live as long, but were they salting some money away along this time to help defray those costs, or are there communities where that didn't happen at all?
Right. So that's the real crux of the issue, is that in the vast majority of cases, the retiree health benefits that local governments in Wisconsin have offered, those have not been funded in advance. So you may have a case where, you know, benefits were offered to someone for work that they did many years ago, but it's today's taxpayers who are being asked to to pay that cost. And that's really what the challenge is going to be for local governments, especially given the fact that they can't necessarily raise property taxes to cover this.
Yeah, the amounts you mentioned for some different communities, these are significant amounts of money relative, I imagine, to the budgets of the cities and counties and school districts. I mean, what kind of impact would this have?
Well, I think a good example is Racine County, where if you look at it on a per capita basis, the liabilities that are being projected there would work out to about $3,500 for every person in the county. And obviously, I think that a reader or a listener can intuitively understand that that's a really substantial cost.
Let's talk about the time frame when this is going to hit. Is this something that's going to all take effect in a certain year? Is this something that's going to ramp up over time as these people who maybe got the jobs in the 70s and early 80s are retiring?
Sure. So obviously, this is not something that is going to come due all at once. This is something that will be over, you know, the next 2 to 3 decades that this will play out. Obviously, it's intensifying right now as baby boomers are retiring and starting to make greater use of these benefits. One aspect to this that's a little different than what governments owe in pension benefits is that retiree health care in many cases can be adjusted. It is not as hard and fast a benefit as a pension benefit is. So local governments do have some flexibility, at least in certain cases, to adjust benefit levels. But the other side of that is obviously in the last year or two, you've seen more turnover among government employees at the city and school level. And they're going to have to factor that in as well as they think about how they're going to compensate their employees.
For people, yeah, currently working, are they changing the formulas now so they're not making that long-term commitment to pay for health care after retirement for somebody who's maybe just starting on a job today?
Right. So in many cases over the last decade, you have seen that many local governments have already adjusted these benefits, and we've seen that intensify since this Governor Walker signed 2011 Act 10, which all but eliminated collective bargaining for public employees in Wisconsin. You know, but for whatever reason, some local governments have not made those changes. And so, you know, there are going to be communities that are going to have to grapple with this and decide, you know, are we going to pay these obligations or are we going to take steps that might reduce them or, you know, some combination of those strategies.
Talking to Jason Stein from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at some underfunded retirement liabilities, especially health care liabilities for many local government units around the state. So you've started to touch on some solutions. What other kinds of things are people talking about here? Do they have options apart from just taking a big crunch over the next 20 years?
Sure. Well, I mean, one piece of really good news in this is that Wisconsin's pension system that almost all local governments outside of Milwaukee participate in, that system is fully funded, one of three systems that can say that in the country. So overall, we are in much better shape here in this state than, places like Illinois. But, you know, going forward, it's going to be difficult for many of these local governments, given that they have property tax caps in place, so they're going to have to look at, do we fund these benefits, do we reduce them, or do we, you know, and in some cases that may mean an effect on the services that they provide to their residents.
Let's talk about that state system you just mentioned, one looking pretty good when you look nationwide. In another piece, you talk a little bit about how we got there. How did we end up in such good shape with the state pension system?
Well, one thing that's really not very well understood about Wisconsin's system is that it is really unique in the country in that it is not what many people think of when they think of a traditional pension, where you get an amount based on your years of service and your salary, and you know, you get cost of living increases, and it doesn't change no matter what. In Wisconsin, you do get a minimum benefit, but your benefit can also rise up from that minimum if investments do well, or can go back down to that minimum if investments don't do so well. And what we saw during the recent recession was that that system actually automatically adjusted benefits down by more than $4 billion, which helped to keep the system fully funded in a way that, you know, many other states saw their pension system, saw shortfalls open up or grow larger within their system.
As I understand it, you write that a lot of the uniqueness of that system goes back to one guy, a guy named Gary Gates. Can you tell us a little bit about him and the origins of this pension system?
Right. Well, so, you know, this system, and it's called shared risk, and the idea is that, you know, the taxpayers of the state and the public employees of the state share some of the risk, and it's not one side or the other that's holding all of the cards or holding the bag, so to speak, if there's a downturn in the economy. And I really searched for quite some time to sort of find the origins of this idea, and as far as I can see, it arose between a gentleman named Gary Gates and another gentleman named Max Sullivan, who is no longer living. But together, they came up in the 1970s with a way of, you know, having this shared risk system that's really different than any other public pension system in the country. It's really sort of a hybrid between a 401k and a traditional pension.
As we wrap up, Jason, as you continue to watch the story, what are you watching for next on Wisconsin's retirement obligations?
You know, it'll be interesting to see if the legislature steps in to take any action. I mean, there was legislation in the previous session that would have required local governments to fund their retiree benefits for new hires. So in other words, they wouldn't have to address a shortfall all at once, but have to start chipping away at it over time. So we'll see if you know, that legislation picks up any steam in the coming session, you know, if it is reintroduced.
Jason, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
That's Jason Stein, Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. He joined us to talk about the state's pension and retirement benefit system and how local governments could have overall more than $6 billion in unfunded costs over the next generation.
Coming up, a labor expert talks about the news that a federal judge upheld Wisconsin's right-to-work law. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.